The bye-bye man may be terrifying, but so is spending too much money when you're buying holiday gifts for everybody on your list, man. So have no fear when you shop using the 12 days of deals on Amazon.com. Get all those great deals at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. And just a quick note before we start this podcast, you're about to hear my interview with Penner that I recorded at his lovely home this afternoon, and I'm just going to, for the faint of heart, there's some language in this podcast, just a heads up on that, and hope you enjoy the podcast. I know I did. Coming to you live from Penner's Place, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy whose resume now includes podcast delivery boy, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special edition of Rob Has a Podcast on the road. Here I am at the lovely home of the great Jonathan Penner. Penner, hey. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for calling me great.
Yes, yes.
You don't know a lot of people.
Yeah, okay. Well, I am very excited to be here with you and talking through everything from the millennials and the Gen Xers. Here with you, and I know you've been very busy, you and your wife Stacy, very hard at work with you have a movie coming out next month.
Yes, Friday, January 13th. Go see The Bye Bye Man at a theater near you.
Yes, this is very exciting, right?
Exciting for me.
Yes, and The Bye Bye Man is a horror movie.
It's a scary movie, a psychological thriller.
Yes.
With some supernatural elements.
Yes.
That's going to be playing across the country, across the world, actually. We just were at a marketing meeting, and it's very exciting.
Yes. Will it be too scary for me?
Yes. No, I don't know. It's PG-13. It's for the whole family. If it's the Manson family.
I mean,
you could go see it. You should see it.
Is it good for millennials and Gen Xers?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. That's the age range that we're shooting for.
Bridging the generations. And thanks again for having me out here.
You're so welcome, man. Thanks for coming out.
Yes.
He brought pizzas and his equipment, folks. If you could see it, he's got a studio on the road. We're in my TV watching room. And enjoying ourselves tremendously.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's very nice to be out here, and thank you for having me again. And very excited to talk about this season with you. I feel like that you and I haven't sat down to talk about one of these seasons in quite some time. You came out to the Know It Alls, the live show that we did.
Which was fantastic.
And you made
fun.
That night. You were
thank
the
you
MVP.
Very much. Oh, yeah, thank you.
Yes.
When, do I get the prize? When will that prize?
Yes, yes. Here's your prize. Yeah. So I'm excited to talk about this. And I always said the next time we do one of these, I want to do it in person. So happy we were able to work this out for today. So the Millennials versus Gen X season, are you liking this season?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. You haven't been tweeting as much this season.
No, you know, it's just timing. As I get older or stupider, or as my life gets crazier, I don't know what, the live tweeting becomes less and less possible. You know, I don't know how it is in your house, but sitting down at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night, every time I rarely can do it now. I have other things that I have to do. So I watch the show later at night.
And you won't do it as you watch later. There's some people that they will just tweet as they watch it. Say, hey, I'm starting it now. Here come the tweets.
Yeah, that seems so ridiculous to me. Part of the fun about live tweeting is that you're alive no matter when you're tweeting. But, you know, tweeting when other people are watching, and it's like, oh, yeah, I agree, or I disagree, or you missed the point, or whatever. It's a conversation for me. So I do miss the live tweeting, but this year has been very crazy for me.
And did you like the idea for this season of the, do you think that there was some meat there?
I'm too old to know what the difference between a millennial and a Gen Xer is. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't hold any water for me. Jeff has gone out of his way. He's tried very hard to say, oh, these guys are hardworking and these guys don't know what hard work is. I wouldn't know it if it bit him in the ass. And yet here we are at the end of the season. We're no longer talking about millennials or Gen Xers. It was like the racist season that I played in, you know, the fans versus favorite season. You need something to talk about in the beginning as you're eliminating the chaff to get to the wheat. And now that we're all wheat, then we can bake some bread and have a great season.
So millennials versus Gen X, that's better than divide the tribes by races.
No, I don't think it's better, but I mean, it's just, same. You know, yeah, what's this? That's people with blonde hair. It's blondes versus brunettes versus redheads, you know, and well, you redheads, you get sunburn, don't you? You know, you got to talk about something for the first couple of episodes, and then you're off to the races.
Do you have any theme ideas that you've been sitting on besides blondes versus brunettes versus redheads?
Yes, Penner and Sun versus the world. That's yes. All I can see.
Okay.
Other versions of the show. There's probably an international version.
Yeah.
If you got, I mean, you know, like when Abby Marie was on Philippines with me, and we tried to make something out of the cultural difference between her and
right.
us, which I actually don't think
wasn't cultural.
Wasn't
right.
cultural at all. But there might be something to that. I mean, at least it's worth a couple of episodes. Frenchmen versus Germans, Italians versus
yeah.
Jews.
No. Don't go
there. We promised we weren't going to get political, and I'm not getting political. I'm just trying to be funny.
So, has there been anybody this season that you have had? Do you have a favorite on this season?
No. Yes, I do. Hannah's my favorite. I don't necessarily think she's going to win, but I think she's absolutely adorable. I've really enjoyed watching her.
Yeah, what is it about Hannah?
I guess I see some of myself in her. She's cute, you know. Not that I see myself that way. She's just a frisky, fun person that I'm enjoying watching her play as she tries to figure it out, and watching a young woman, to my mind, a young woman navigating all these guys so artfully. And yes, isn't that funny? She's the last woman standing. I mean, I don't know. They didn't make that much of this last night, but she eliminated Sunday because I think she rightly suspects that taking a woman to the end might be a smart move. And I think she has a great argument. Everyone thinks they have a great argument for a final tribal for why they should win, but she will now. And I think she eliminated Sunday for that very reason. The two of them might have hated each other's guts. They never made any of that clear on the show, but I've enjoyed her.
I'd love to get your opinion on where you weigh in on this idea of a resume on Survivor, because I feel like that's kind of
when did that start
with how you've, you know, spoken about the game before.
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard about resume Survivor, which is kind of shitty, right? That's like what you have to worry about at home when you're looking for a job. And it's like the idea that you're making your final tribal speech as a job app. You know, I'm the guy who deserves the million more than this guy. Maybe that makes sense as an analogy. That's okay. You know, why should you give me the job more than that person? So you build your resume. I think it's clear in seasons past why the winner wins. It's either because they've actually earned the right or because they were less shitty than the other guy. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I can't vote for Russell Hance, so I'll vote for whoever the hell this girl is. I still don't remember her name, you know, occasionally it's not just because I played the season. You know, you'll get a real conflict of does Yul deserve to win or does Ozzy deserve to win?
Yeah,
that seems rarer and rarer. But this resume building notion,
rare-o.
I guess it makes it rare. Hey,
yeah,
good.
There you go.
Rare-o. What do I think of it? I think it's an easy talking point. Mm-hmm. And I think the show is always looking for ways, you know, talking points that people can glom onto.
You know, and speaking of talking points, we have this season with the trust clusters, the voting blocks. I feel like that you would not have engaged in that type of talk about the game.
No, it's fun. I was watching it last night. I'm like, what is this bullshit? And how do you play? I mean, you know, it terrifies me. The idea, who knows if I could ever get back out there, if you could. But, you know, the idea that making an alliance and just not trying to stick with your alliance, although, honestly, I think that's really what's happening. I think this is a lot of smoke and mirrors. You know, David and Ken have obviously worked together effectively the whole way through. You know, the vote for Sunday, the vote for Will made complete sense in just old school Survivor gameplay sensibility. Yeah, you know, they're down in the numbers. Get rid of the flipping vote, which was Will. He was the fulcrum vote. You got to get rid of him. They flushed out the idol. They got rid of Sunday. It was beautiful gameplay from the majority alliance. So all this trust cluster, again, it's talking points that we're getting stuck on. That's what we're talking about, is the talking points that they would have us talk about. I don't actually think the nuts and bolts of the game have changed that much, mm-hmm. although the idea of loyalty seems to have, for maybe for the better. I don't know.
What do you mean by that? That players are less loyal now?
Yeah, the idea that you just, you know, you make an alliance, you hope that it's strong, you hope that you can win enough that alliance moves forward, and you're going to make one big move in the last act of the story, right?
Because in a way, wouldn't it be beneficial to like a Cook Islands Penner to, you know, when people are like, oh, how could you? You and Candace mutinied against us. Where's your loyalty now? That would be like nothing.
Absolutely. That would just be like smart gameplay. Yeah, absolutely. And look, and it put me, no, I mean, truthfully, right?
Yeah.
It put me in the position where I got to make the decision, you know, and truthfully, I didn't drive a hard enough bargain with Yul and the Raro 4 when I went back to them and say, you got to take me to at least the final five, you know, because I just assumed like I was in with them and they correctly took me out because I flip-flopped and might have flip-flopped again. Nowadays, it's like, of course you're going to flip-flop. Of course you're going to work with whoever the hell you got to work with to, you know, to get to the end. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't spoken to any of the current players to see how that feels, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in our day, and I hate to sound like such an old-timer, I don't mean to, but, you know, when I played, the idea that you would try to make an alliance and when they backstabbed you, it probably hurt, as opposed to, we're just playing the game, I have no alliance to anybody, so, you know, I can't expect to not be hurt, and I can't expect to be hurt when it happens to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I absolutely understand. I mean, you couldn't just say, like, hey, Candace was my voting block, and, you know, I had to,
yeah.
My trust cluster stepped off the mat, so right. I had to as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the game was much more personal then, as opposed to this game that's, you know.
I think so, and certainly watching Jay and Adam last night, which was really nice. You know, I think Jay, though he's playing a really fine game, you know, and has had some tough knocks because he aligned himself maybe based on age or sensibility with some foolish players earlier in the game and finds himself a bit of a loner now. But the two of them really have connected in a way that is new and unusual to me, and I really appreciated that. So I could see that.
You know, so much was made about Jay's idol. We have to flush the idol.
Right.
You know, back in the Philippines, you had the hidden immunity idol. You played it at the correct time.
Right.
There was a tribal council where it looked like you were going to get voted out. You didn't play the idol. The votes didn't come for you. I mean, what are the types of things that people should be trying to look for? Like, how do you know that right moment to play it? Obviously, Jay played it the wrong way last night.
Well, I mean, it was only the wrong way because they didn't come after him.
Mm-hmm.
It was the right way because they made the motions toward him. You know, I mean, Adam went right at him and said, you got to play your idol, man. I'm telling you straight up. You know, he was helping him out. He faked him out. But Jay's playing the idol was not the wrong move. He just got played, you know. I mean, they bluffed him, and they bluffed him effectively. On the other hand, the vote before, two votes before, whenever it was, when Will actually voted against Zeke, but did not let the people he was voting with actually know and trust where his vote was going,
mm-hmm.
So Adam actually wound up using his idol for Ken ineffectually, that's why Will went home the next time. Because he did not build trust and make it clear, I'm with you guys. You don't have to use your idol. Let's use that idol together effectively. Let me vote with you, and then we'll figure it out from there. He fucked them up. Yes, he voted with them, but they made the exact right move to get rid of him the next time, I think.
That's interesting. So you feel like that alliance felt like that they were, even though Will stayed with them, they were betrayed in that they wasted an idol?
Absolutely. He, you know, he voted with them, but he didn't vote with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't say, no, this is what I'm going to do. It wasn't just the way it was edited. Often the editing leads you to, you know, not be sure how the vote's going to go, but everyone at the tribal knows how the vote is going to go, you know, whereas that alliance actually was as blindsided by Will's vote as the other side was, as Zeke was, because otherwise Adam would not have played the idol the way he played it. There was no reason for him to, if he actually knew where Will's vote was going.
This season, we've seen so much of the players playing the idols for each other, where a person says that they're going to, I'm going to play my idol tonight for Penner.
Right.
A couple times.
That never happened. By the way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, no. Nobody's playing their idol for you. But do you feel like is that something else that's shifted the idea of thinking about protecting your allies with the idol more so than just this is for survival? In Philippines, when you looked for the idol early on, you weren't saying like, okay, this is great. I'll save this in my back pocket if I need to use it on Carter, right?
Right. No, I never said that, and I probably wouldn't have done that, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But I did always felt that the use of the idol, the promise of the idol, is very effective in that way. that that's a way to bring somebody over on your side. That's what I tried to do with Jeff Kent, and actually probably did, you know, in hindsight, realize that that helped bring him, make him realize, like, I ain't going to get rid of this guy on the first vote the way I planned to when I first got on the beach, this guy being me. You know, I said to him, I have this idol. Let's create an alliance and use this to move forward as a beacon, as a shield, as all the things that an idol can be. Actually using it for somebody else, wasting it on a guarding, well, no, he used it effectively for Hannah. Is that right? David did? Adam did?
No, nobody used it correctly on Hannah. That so that the votes came for Hannah and David played one on Ken. And then Adam played an idol on Hannah, but Will, you know, he had already voted for Zeke. So there were going to be five votes for Zeke.
Right,
so,
that's what I'm saying. So they wasted this idol, but he did play it for Hannah. I'm going to protect you. So that was a wasted idol, unfortunately. It certainly was a trust builder, even though Hannah last night can say, he saved our ass. She didn't care about, you know, the editors, and we all are, you know, even though we all get suckered as we're watching it, in hindsight, you realize the editors have to pick and choose these tiny little slivers that help tell the story that they want to tell. For her to say, he saved us, come on, let's think about not voting him out, that's enough to cast some doubt on whether or not she's going to vote for Will. She was always going to vote for Will over the vote for David. Never going to vote for David.
In terms of Will being an 18-year-old, now, your son is older than Will, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, are 18-year-olds on Survivor, is this a good idea? Do you think an 18-year-old has enough life experience to be out there with the other Survivor players?
What I see with Will is, no, not necessarily enough life experience, but enough Survivor fandom to know how to play the game. You know, the actual nuts and bolts, and maybe this is what we're talking about as the game has changed. The game is now like Uber Survivor. These folks all know the game and know it better than I do. I mean, there are super fans out there who know every player. I meet people all the time who are like, oh, wait, don't you remember when so-and-so beat so-and-so at the so-and-so? And I'm like, no, I couldn't even tell you who won that season. You know, honestly, I swear to God, I don't even really know all the people that I played with. I couldn't tell you their names.
Yes, you could. Stop it. If we got a lineup.
If you had a picture of all of them. But for me to like sit here and tell you the names of everybody that I played with, it would be tough for me. I mean, that's just the truth. It's just my own stupidity.
You could pick Sekou out of the lineup.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I could pick Sekou out of the lineup. And Sekou, I hear, is not doing well, so I send him my best regards.
Yes. But
we got off the top.
Maybe some of the fans from Fans versus Favorites, who knows? It'll be a fun game.
No, at this point, no. You know what? Honestly, I do know Jason, the squirrely boy. I do know him. I don't know what he looks like right now. Jason, what's his last name?
Siska.
Okay. Jason Siska. How are you, Jason? I hope you're well. You're now twice as old as when I played with you. You were six then. And now you're an 18-year-old on Survivor. Sure, Will's playing a decent game. He made it to the final seven or something. Yeah. You know, more power to him, right? So bringing those folks on, I don't think he wasn't particularly interesting to me. You know, what he had to talk about in terms of being an 18-year-old wasn't that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But his knowledge of Survivor was pretty interesting, right? He certainly, you know, I want to make a big move and all this, and he made a big move and shot himself right in the foot. And they said, thank you. They used him and goodbye. And they got rid of him correctly.
What's your opinion on David?
I like that, David. I met David once. We had a very nice time.
Yes.
And he's an interesting guy to watch. I mean, he is, you know, because for all of his neuroses and whoever they started the season with him, you know, in a kind of a Cochrane mold of, ooh, bugs and ooh, how do you do that? And oh, I'm so awkward and nerdy. Some of that may have been an act, or if it wasn't an act, it certainly he used it as an almost a protection because he was not seen as a threat in any way. And he's now, you turn around and they're calling him the head of the snake. Where the hell that came from, I don't know. All of a sudden last night, we got to get rid of the head of the snake, cut off the head of the snake. It's like, again, you know, these talking points that are just whatever, because now we're talking about him, so they're effective.
Why, who is the head of the snake?
I guess he is.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, all of a sudden there's a snake on the island. But I'm enjoying watching him, and I actually think he has a shot at winning the game. You know,
do you have one person that you feel like is your winner pick at this point, going into the finale?
No,
Yeah.
I honestly don't.
It's a very wide open season in terms of, I think that you probably can, I think there's four that you could choose from.
I don't see Brett and I don't see Hannah winning the game.
Right? Yeah. And I think out of the other four, I think you can make a really compelling case.
For
and sometimes like before the finale, we're talking about like, oh, well, yeah, I guess this guy, I guess I'll give him a 20-1 shot. But I think that you could probably talk yourself into any of the four of Ken, David, Adam, or Jay.
Absolutely. I mean, standing on their own, you could make an argument for any of the four of them. If you put them, I don't know if it's a final two or final three season. I assume it's
got to be
three.
A three. I mean, we're going into the finale with six people.
Okay. So it's a final three. I'm going to guess Hannah's going to make it to the final three, right? I think it's a pretty good guess. They'll probably get rid of Brett next.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on who wins immunity, if there's another idol, we'll see, you know, if these guys fall, whether Jay or Ken falls. And then it's going to be a real fucking argument on the final tribal seat for either the standing physical guy, either Ken or Jay, versus the standing emotional, intellectual chess playing guy, David or Adam, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Hannah in the middle or one of those other two, you know, guys. And then it becomes a really, really interesting conversation, I think, because. You know, Ken would have a hell of a shot, right? Jay would have a pretty great shot over either of the intellectual guys. Whereas if those guys can eliminate Jay and Ken, I'm really just doing this math in my head. Tell me if you agree.
Okay.
Right? If Jay or Ken, if they're both eliminated and you've got Hannah and you've got the two skinny guys.
Yeah.
That becomes a very interesting tribal, which of Adam or David gets to win the game. I think it's hard for either of them to beat either Jay or Ken in a final. What do you think?
Boy, Jay is the biggest threat, I think, in terms of the jury, because all of his buddies are on the jury between Taylor and Michelle. And, you know, I think that Zeke liked Jay. I think that Will obviously liked Jay. I think Sunday probably had like warm feelings towards Jay. So if Jay gets to the end, I'm pretty sure he wins under any circumstance, no matter who he's up against.
Right. So that's why he's going to be the obvious guy to eliminate.
Yeah. Now, David, in the end, sure, on paper, it looks good. But in terms of the people that like him that are on the jury, there's Jessica. And I'm not sure who else likes David that's on the jury right now.
Well, it would be Hannah, it would be
unless
Ken,
she's in the end.
No, exactly. So if Jay makes it to the end, I think he wins.
Yes.
If Ken makes it to the end without Jay, I think he has a hell of a shot at winning.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I mean, he really does.
Ken's been the toughest one to read this whole season, that I feel like that the opinion on him is pretty split. Some people, even on the show and on, you know, the community, some people really like him. Some people are out on him. Do you have a take on Ken?
Well, yeah, I like him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's playing a great game. He's won a bunch of individual immunities. He hasn't pissed anybody off, as far as I can tell.
A lot of people off. I mean, he certainly pissed Will off last week when he went back and told everybody the plan.
Yeah, that was very stupid. No, that's right. That was very stupid. And I chalked that up. You're right, of course. I chalked that up to how upset he was over the family visit. I think people underestimate the effect of the family visit, of either getting that visit or not getting it. Let me tell you, being, you know, out there and seeing your wife or your brother, whoever the hell it is, and then being told, no, you're not going to get to see that person. It is infuriating and very, very disappointing. And I just imagine that there was a lot of ill will there.
So talk that through with me. So that was from what, Cook Islands?
Parvati did not.
Yeah, Parvati won, and she
Stacey
was.
Stacey and I came in second, but that's neither here nor there. Parvati won, and there was no way in hell she was going to let me have that. I was the next. I mean, I got voted out that night, I guess.
Yeah. And then you just got to see Stacey from
I walked over. You know, I didn't wait for anybody to say, you can or can't. I was like, fuck that. So I just gave her a big hug and a kiss, but even that was, you know, see ya.
Yeah.
Gotta go. And it really is hurtful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what that like made you just angry with Parvati, or you were just like short with everybody at that point?
Well, then I think I got sent off to exile, actually, that night.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think that was really rough. It's like, not only can't you see Stacy, but we're going to really, you're going to get your pooch screwed hard here. So I had plenty of time to go fuming, and then I came back, and that was the end, really. But I was also pissed the last time I played, because I got voted out the night before the family visit, and Stacy was on the island.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, she made the trip down there, and she was told, like, they tell everybody.
Yeah, they don't let you just meet up, like, unless you're here.
There's seven of you here, and one of you, we just got to let you know, they're going to get voted out today. And I'll let you know after the tribal who's not going to see their loved one. And it was her.
Yeah. My mom, when she came and did the loved one's visit in the Amazon, they were sort of like all just like standing by, and they let them know, like, hey, there's a tribal council tonight and somebody's going to go out, and nobody, like, they're like in sequester. They're not really allowed to talk to each other.
Right.
And it kind of came over the walkie. And then it was this guy, Alex's mom. They pulled her aside. And it's okay. Now you got to go.
Right. You're going to stay alone in the hotel tonight, tomorrow.
Yeah. While and then you go home.
And then you go home with all these people that have seen there. And you know that your loved one was just voted out and blah, blah, blah. So that's hard. But to get back to Ken, it's a split decision because his gameplay is not so clear that he's been, on top of the game, his resume building, to use, again, this terminology. But I think he would have a hell of an argument to make. But I don't know. I can't sit here and say Ken beats Adam or David. I can't say that.
Yeah. These big juries, do you like a jury that has this many people on it, or do you think that it should be cut off?
I don't know. I never thought about it.
You never thought about it?
Why? What's the difference?
Well, you have so many different...
You got a lot of people who have their hair combed nicely.
Well, yeah, you have a lot of people...
scowling.
Yeah, and then a lot of people in the final tribal council that, you have 10 different votes that are going to be coming in.
Okay.
No, I mean, issue for you.
No, nah, I don't know why they, now they've got a final episode with six people still alive. I mean, they're milking this thing. They had two people out last night. Within an hour, they did a double tribal. They are trying to keep people around as long as possible. I have no idea what the thinking behind it is.
Yeah.
But do you? I mean, what's the idea?
I think that, well, let's see how this vote goes. But if it ends up being like completely lopsided, I think that there's an argument. Like the last season where we had 10 people was where Jeremy won against Spencer and Tasha. And not to argue that Tasha or Spencer should have gotten more votes. But I do think that potentially it could lead to like some groupthink, like, what is somebody who is voted out day 18, day 19? Do they really know about ultimately, like, they're making like a big, they have as much say as somebody who was there 38 days.
Yeah. That's exactly. You make a really, really good point.
We need an electoral jury system.
God,
yes.
No. You make a really good point. There is a lot of groupthink that goes on at Ponderosa, even though we're encouraged not to participate in that. Of course, you can't help it, and you get to see who survives and what they have to say about the people who just, who just voted them out as people come in. You're right. If you get voted out 18 days in, 19, 20 days in, whatever, do you really know the effectiveness of what's been going on in the camp?
I mean, if I recall back in Cook Islands, which I think was the first time they did the final three.
Right.
I mean, there were people that were voting that never like even played in the game with Yule that had to vote.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So they were just watching it from afar. They might as well have been watching it on TV. So but you make an interesting point. I mean, they obviously do it. Well, there's production reasons why they do it, right? They get the first whatever it is, six or eight people out, and they have to take them on a trip. They only have so much room at Ponderosa,
right?
They can't have people sitting around for 37 days or something.
Yeah, we don't need 18 people voting.
Right. So, but maybe making that first half of the people who get voted out go on the trip and a smaller jury. I like that idea. I think that's a smart idea.
Yeah.
But I had never thought about it.
I just think that probably if I was going to look at it from a production point of view, I think they feel like, okay, well, at least, we have 10 people at the final tribal council. Another lottery ticket. Somebody's going to give us something good at that final tribal council. Another chance. Somebody's going
to
give us a Penner speech.
You get to see these, cleaned up. Oh, thank you. I don't know. You get to see these cleaned up folks scowling, or giggling or something. I don't find it particularly fascinating stuff, but these guys are so fucking smart about how they put this show together at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They've kept it going for 17 years. they must know something that we don't know about what the audience wants to see, I guess.
Yeah. The one person in sort of this formula of the potential winners is also Adam, that we haven't touched on too much. Do you have any feelings on Adam?
No. He leaves me kind of cold, even though his mother, of course, is, I guess, passed away now.
Yes.
Which is terrible. And he was out there, you know, dealing with this stuff. As a player, I don't really get much sense of him. And he doesn't touch me. I mean, obviously, he touches a lot of other people. You know, I'm not enjoying his game as much as I am David's, Ken's, and Hannah's. And I guess to a degree, Jay, who I appreciate, at least he has a joie de vivre and a sense of humor about what the hell's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Steven and I both thought it was interesting, the decision to go after Sunday at that second tribal council, because, you know, Hannah said, well, hey, I don't want her, somebody to take her as the goat to the end. Right. But there was a lot of people, specifically Adam. I didn't understand why that was in his best interest to get rid of Sunday, when it looked like it was such a good spot for him to pick up Brett and Sunday as sort of these two votes in his pocket.
Because there is, I mean, again, it's done for the editing of how we perceive it. I do think that they've got a pretty solid four there, you know, and they're going to take out either Brett or Sunday. They've flushed out Jay's idol correctly. They were going to take out either one of them. And we don't know what the relationship with Brett is. Maybe they just have a closer relationship, or maybe Sunday was driving people crazy, or maybe Hannah just said, I can't be on the beach with her for one more day, or she's actually the biggest threat. All of the reasons why you pick one real ostensibly non-threatening person over another, you know, it was one of those things, I'm sure.
But isn't Adam four in that four?
Yeah, but you know what? At a certain point, you're in the top four, and you got to let the chips fall where they may. And if you muck around too much, like Will did, you get the chop. You know what I mean? You've picked your final four. They're going to be the final four, and don't screw it up. They flushed out the idol. If they're smart and Jay doesn't win immunity, as much as they like him, they should vote him out. Right. Brett is not as big a threat, in the same way they voted me out before they voted Carter out, you know, because, I mean, they figured if anybody could, I don't know, screw somebody over, do something to stay alive, I would over Carter. Rightly or wrongly, he's a much bigger physical threat than me, but they took me out before him. They're going to take Jay out before Brett. They should take Brett out, and then they're going to, you know, see where the chips fall.
In terms of Jay and flushing his idol, I mean, did you think that it would have been a smarter move for Adam to go along with Jay and Brett and Sunday, and then potentially they just say, okay, let's just get rid of Jay at the final four? I mean, you played with somebody like an Ozzy that's such an immunity threat, that Jay is the biggest threat. I don't know if you want to put him in the Ozzy league. I don't know if too many people are. But I feel like if you could somehow feel like if we could beat him at Final Four for immunity, I feel like for Adam to sit in the end with Brett and Sunday, that's such a good spot for
him. It's too far. You can't. To my mind,
yeah,
you just can't play that far in advance, because you will get killed before then. You know, I mean, you got to play a winner's game, and you got to play the game that gets you to the end. And I just think if he flopped on them at this point, and aligned with Jay, no way. He would absolutely lose. And folks who might have voted for him would vote against him. You know,
what did you think of this idea of the reward steal this season, where Adam had it and then he sort of got outed about it by other people?
He played it perfectly, didn't he?
Well, ultimately he did. But there was a while where he had a lot of heat on him in terms of everybody being upset that he even had it and didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, that was all bullshit, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, you know, it was heat. It was TV heat. It wasn't real heat. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, what was I going to do? Why would I talk to you about it? You wouldn't have talked to me about it. It's not a threat to anybody. I told you about it later in the day. He used it perfectly.
Yeah.
Right? Magnificently. He got exactly what he wanted out of it. And it was genius. Now, Jay has it and he hasn't used it. Is that right?
Well, the problem is I don't think there's been a reward challenge since he got it.
Get to play fast and loose, too. Last night, there wasn't a single reward, was there?
Right. So I don't know if there's going to be another reward challenge the rest of the way.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, well, they haven't had an auction. They haven't had a couple of things, you know, but as a tool to give to somebody, as a tool to wave in somebody's face and say, I'm not going to use it. or and have him, you know, say, I appreciate you didn't use it, so now I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give you what you didn't force me to give you. All these great things. I mean, I think it was fun. I don't know what's going to happen with this final thing that Ken...
The legacy advantage.
The legacy advantage. All this fantastic hooey, you know, that makes it very hard to plan your game. They're throwing all these chutes and ladders into the mix, which I guess makes it fun. You know, I'd much rather see an episode like the one last night, which was all action, rather than what is traditionally that episode where folks like me or somebody would win a group a reward and go to the local village and eat some local food and dance or play basketball with the kids, which, believe me, is a fantastic experience for the person enjoying it,
yes,
but is not necessarily the most gripping television.
Yes, so you'd be fine with two tribal councils an episode.
Well, you know, it becomes an interesting game if you get 40 people out there and you're going to eliminate two at a time.
40 people?
Well, I'm just making it up. I mean, you know, I didn't miss the reward challenge last night at all, right? I thought last night was actually a really good, well-edited, rich episode.
Yeah.
And what was missing were the rewards of people sitting there eating ice cream or getting drunk on a boat, you know, or,
getting faded.
Getting faded, please, dancing around with some folks. And I didn't miss it. I didn't need it at all.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting to do twice as much Survivor. Mm. Boy, you really would have hated this Australian Survivor.
Why? How many were out there?
Well, it was 24 people.
Yeah.
But it was that if you were lucky, if there was a tribal council per episode.
Really?
Well, sometimes they didn't always vote somebody off. It was on three nights a week.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't have to live through that. And how was that successful for them?
55 days.
55 days. And where'd they play? In Tasmania? Where they?
No,
play?
I think they played in Samoa.
And was this a hit in Australia?
I think so. I think it was, it did well.
Really?
Yeah.
55 days. So it was like Big Brother meets Survivor.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe Mark Burnett will take a lesson from them and try something new. I mean, they're always looking to try it. They've got the legacy challenge and the reward steal thing.
Yeah.
This time, right? So that's two major twists in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this stuff is fun because I think it's just you invent more reasons that people want to vote other people out. Like, it's just you're just putting more stuff out there. And, you know, and the survivors are like babies and like, oh, he has that thing. Now we have to get rid of him.
Yeah.
He has a thing.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that it actually works that way. I mean, I haven't seen that it actually does work that way, you know, that's why they're voting for people. To me, it's just because the viewers and the players who are so Survivor savvy now can take more plot twists. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the language of Survivor has gotten much more complex and we can all follow it without, you know, because you're just adding one more letter to the alphabet. You know, Survivor 17 years ago, if you showed that and showed this without all of the interim seasons that got us from there to here, wouldn't make any sense almost, you know. But now we can follow it easily. So who knows what else they're going to throw at the game. It's cool.
Okay,
I wish they'd throw more money at the game.
Throw more money. You know, I read a infographic or a stat that the $1 million that you win in Survivor is worth 30% less than it was in 2000.
Of course it is. And you're playing against more people.
Yeah.
Right? You got to beat 19 people to get the million, which is much harder than beating 15 people. It is. I've been saying this all along, and Trump. Oh. Jeff Probst just says, Penner, shut up.
Hey, Jeff Kent blamed Obama when he... Well, he didn't blame Obama. But
Jeff
he,
who?
Yeah. All right, let me ask you some of these questions that I have for you from...
what have you been doing for an hour? Of course.
Well, I got some questions that people sent in.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gregory McBean says...
made-up name.
No, it's
Gregory
a real name.
McBean.
It's a real name.
All right, Greg, what's your question?
What does Penner think about the pendulum strategy that Will tried to pull off? So Will tried to... His plan was he said, this is the pendulum strategy. I'm going to vote off Zeke. And then I'm going to vote off David, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to vote off Jay.
Yeah, Greg, what do you think of the pendulum strategy? It worked exactly as I figured it would have worked. You play games like that and they cut the pendulum off and the pendulum crashes to the ground.
Yeah.
It was not good. Not good for Will. I mean, the rest of them used him and abused him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you're 18. You can get used and abused.
Yeah, little boy.
Yeah, little boy when you're playing with the big boys.
So John Densford wants to know, do you agree with Hannah's strategy of eliminating the goats? What player archetype benefits most from that strategy? Well, let's just talk about the idea of getting rid of the goats, because I always thought it was such a bad move in the Philippines, where Abby Maria was sitting there at the final five, and Malcolm Denise and Lisa and that other guy, they decide to get rid of Abby Maria. Gotta take her out.
I have no idea. I mean, no, there are two things. One is Hannah's strategy is brilliant in only that she is saying, let's get rid of the goats when she is the ultimate goat in the game, right? So she's getting rid of the other goats, you know? So she's playing beautifully. She is not a strong physical player. She is a pretty good social player. I mean, socially, she's great. But I'm talking about, you know, gameplay. She's making a lot of sense. But she's going to have a hell of a time arguing that she should be the winner of the game. That said, she probably will be sitting certainly in the final four, if not in the final three. Taking a goat to the end. It sounds like a good idea, but it rarely works, and I'll tell you why, because goats are often, certainly evil goats, like Abby Marie, you know, are hard to be around. Mm-hmm. Tolerating that person to say, I'm going to keep this person with me, Philip Shepard, I'm going to take this person with me all the way, I don't know that I have the self-confidence or the calm to, would have the self-confidence or calm to do that. And that's how you convince yourself, it's better to go with people like me, that I would like to lose against in a one-on-one, let's play a fair game, mostly because you like those people and you'd like to see them at the end and you can't bear to be spend another second on the beach with some of these psychopaths.
So this is a question from Jim Rosario, who says, ever since you mentioned what's your story, do you think that castaways come into the game pushing a story, or do they let one develop naturally? See, I kind of feel like, and I talked about this a little bit in the beginning, that I think the idea of your story, I feel like that is almost at odds with your resume. And I think that the survivors talk more about their resume than their story.
I never, Jim, thought about it in terms of my story or going into the game. Like, what's Jonathan Penner's story? He's a guy who blah, blah, blah. And then he started the game. I'm talking about the story inside the game, the story that the editors, the story that the producers, the story that even the other players are going to be dealing with. And when I play Survivor, and if you watch it from a storytelling perspective, and I'm talking about a show business structure of storytelling, you can break it down very, very technically into act breaks, plot points, second acts, characters, all of these different things that are the techniques that I use in my profession, right? So in terms of story, I know that the editors are crafting tales of these people, and you get to have some effect on what that tale is going to be. That's what I was talking about with Lisa, that she had a chance to play the hero story or whatever it is. It's not that she went in the victim or the hero, heroine or the TV star or whatever who was going to do this. It's that as you're living the game, you get to affect what story they are going to cut together.
Every tribal council this season, there's talk about big moves, making the right big moves. You got to make moves to be seen. You can't win the game. If you make big moves, then people are going to want to come after you, but should you make them anyway?
Yeah.
Do you have a take on any of the move talk that goes on during the game?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. You know, that held water for me as I was listening to it last night. But I think what's happened is, again, this goes back to sort of what we were talking about, the extraordinary database that the players now have of Survivor, right? They've all seen, or if they haven't, they should have seen every episode of Survivor, and some of them already know, have encyclopedic knowledges of Survivor gameplay. And so there's almost this intellectual notion that, the winners make big moves, get there by making big moves. And so it's this almost self-fulfilling prophecy that you have to make big moves. Or he made a big move and he made a big move. Well, I can't win unless I make a big move. And I think that's part of what creates this new gameplay, which is a lack of allegiance and sort of more trust clusters, or how am I going to stay alive for the next 3 days? Who am I going to work with? Because I have to make a big move. And I think it makes the game very interesting, but also very exhausting, you know, because people just have to be on their toes all the time and making a move. It'll be interesting to see at the end of the day now who wins, whether it's not just somebody who stayed alive, found an idol, played it correctly, played a good social game, and won some immunity challenges.
Does all that talk about the all of the big moves, does that make you want to play less? Because I feel like that from what you're saying, I feel like that it, almost like going, you know, 180 degrees. I feel like that if I was out there on the island with you, I feel like, especially if you're saying like, hey, let's, you know, slow this down. What's with all this talk about these big moves? I feel like that you'd probably be one of the people that a player could trust the most out there.
Yeah. It doesn't make me want to play less. My knees make me want to play less. You know, if I ever got out there, I'd be over 55 years old, which is old in Survivor world.
Yes.
But the gameplay itself, no, I find fascinating. You know, I mean, it's always new, and all I have is my word. I'm not comfortable, and I'm putting this out there for any potential survivors out there who may find themselves on an island with me.
They don't listen this far into the show.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable. Look, I'm like a homebody, right?
Right.
I've been married 25 years. I work out of my house. I like things the way that I like them.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be comfortable, you know, just shafting people left and right. I really, you know, that's just not what would make me happy out there. Now, that might make me a big, honking, slow-moving target, or it might make me somebody really worth working with, because chances are, if I tell you you've got my word, you got my word.
Right.
But I've always played that way.
Right.
Tried to.
Yeah. I think that'd be interesting. With all these kids and their resumes and their big moves.
I don't have a resume.
Right. I think that would be fun. I would like to see it.
Okay. Well, let's find out.
There was so much talk this season about Figgy and Taylor.
Not for me, there wasn't.
Well, you went through Adam and Candace.
Come on. They're so boring. It's so dull. I mean, it would be dull to be
Figgy
out there
Taylor?
With them. Yeah, it was just like Snoozeville to me. There's a couple of twerpy little kids, not so little kids, twerpy folks having a fun thing out there. They made something out of it. They blew themselves up righteously, and they're the history in the game. I didn't think twice about them. I thought they were fools.
Yeah. What'd you think about when Taylor stole the food this season?
He's an idiot.
Yeah.
Taylor's a potso. You know, he deserved what he got. That he went as far as he did's amazing. He's probably a nice guy. He may be an asshole. I have no idea. He came across as a fool to me, and I let's not talk about it.
You know, we haven't touched
Taylor's on... Taylor's much more interesting. Your Zeke. Not Taylor. Zeke is a more interesting character.
Yes. Were you impressed with Zeke this season?
Yeah, I was, and I think he's an interesting person, you know? His relationship with his father moved me. I like that. And... you know, he was obviously a student of the game and was sort of caught between what happens is what I identified with Zeke was because if you are smart, and I'm not sure I'm as smart as Zeke or but I was always called smart, felt to be smart. And that was untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That was almost diabolical. Right. You couldn't trust him because he was thinking too much. He was always thinking. I mean, people said that to me. You're always thinking about something. I'm like, well, what do you do when you're awake? You know what I mean? I mean, of course I'm thinking about something.
Who would say this to you? Everybody?
Yes. And even smart people. Becky Lee. You're always thinking. Yes, Becky, I'm awake. I'm thinking. What do you do? You know, Zeke struck me that way. And I think that people felt that way about him. They somehow felt like he was just working too hard or smarter than they were, whether he was or not. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, seemingly a problem. How do you combat that? How do you not make it seem like you're always thinking?
I don't know how you do that. Not think. Just act like Taylor. Just goof around and be kind of dopey. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that one of the recurring themes that we've talked about on the podcast has been just the idea of making people feel like that you are just you're not up to anything, just putting people at ease. And I think that's that idea of that, oh, you're always thinking, it's sort of like the opposite of putting people at ease, that for whatever reason, something is happening and people are being made uncomfortable.
Yeah. You know, I'm a blunt spoken person and it would be something like, I would say, no, I don't talk in code. You know,
right.
I try not to. And so because people do talk in code, if I said blue is blue, they thought I was saying something different
because
he can't actually be saying blue is blue. He really means, but we don't know what he's saying. I mean, it was very strange,
yeah.
You know, and part of that is how do you, as you say, put people at ease? I mean, how do you communicate? Why is it? I mean, I don't want to, you know, diverge too far, but, you know, it struck me. I was thinking about it, we were going to talk today. How is it that six of the first seven votes were women, right? And five of those six women were the black and Asian women, right? How did that happen, right? And it's because those folks somehow were felt to feel uncomfortable in the group. It was easier to vote them out because they were alien to the majority, you know? And how do you combat against that if you're a black woman, if you're an Asian woman? You can't. You can just be who you are. And if you're not surrounded by other folks that are completely like-minded, well, then you're the weird one. You get voted out. I think that's one of the strangest things about Survivor is how the group think affects it early in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't seem to talk about that so much, but I think it's always been very clear to me.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to go back to with where you say blue is blue, and for some reason people say, well, he can't possibly mean that. I thought that there was a interesting parallel between Adam this season a couple times where he was in a similar position where he's like telling the truth to people, and he did it like in a way where he was too blunt and he made people upset with Taylor and with Jay as well, like where that he was talking with Jay in the ocean and, you know, Jay asked him basically like, am I the target? And he's like, yeah, you're on the bottom. Right. You're next. And he really gave it to him straight.
Right. God forbid.
And Jay got like really upset and he went back and he's like, you know, Adam's a bad guy. Adam is this. Adam is that. And that reminded me of you, that he just like was very straightforward, but it did not go over well.
No. And it's probably affected me in other parts of my life. If I'm honest, if I'm thinking about it, you know, it's like, how do you handle people? People like to be handled with care, you know? My honesty, and this is something that I really learned after the first season that I played, is that my honesty, people don't need my honesty. You know, even if they think they're asking me for my honesty, they don't need it. They don't want it. And they don't deserve it. There are very few people who need it, want it, and not deserve it. But, you know, my wife deserves my absolute honesty, and that's what she gets. She needs it and she wants it. Sometimes it's even too blunt spoken for her. But for the rest of the world, you know, when blue is blue, you can say, yeah, it's kind of a cool green thing going on. It's almost like blue, you know, just to handle folks with a little more delicacy. And I guess that's the way that most people want to go through life, is to be handled with care.
My wife does not want honesty.
Is that right?
How is dinner? She's not looking for an honest answer.
My wife tries, let me tell her the truth.
That doesn't go. That's not what she wants.
Right. No, that's right. That's right. And you have to learn that with the people that are around you.
One day I think I will.
No. Well, someday you will. On Survivor, I learned the hard way, I think. You know, or every day in my life, I learned the hard way that, you know, you don't have to actually just tell the truth. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying lie.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that there are ways to handle other people without just being bluntly honest.
Does that get you in trouble at tribal council? I mean, like, is that, would you, when you get asked a question at tribal council, are you trying to give as, you know, as truthful of an answer in terms of like giving Jeff what he wants? Or is there some like subterfuge? Is that the right word?
Yeah. I once got called out by Jeff for that very thing. The opposite, you know, he asked me some kind of question and I gave him a smoke and mirrors, like non-answer,
right?
Because folks, you don't want to blow up your own game, right? You know, you don't need to say, and like Lisa Welchel made it very clear on the night that I played my idol, like the vote's coming for you, buddy, you know, and everybody else was like nudging her, you're giving up too much information. You know, I once gave a smoke and mirrors answer and Jeff was like, oh yeah, I'm Jonathan Penner. I'm so smart. I can just fuck around and say anything I want without telling the truth. You know, come on, man, give me something. And I said, Jeff, I'm playing for $1 million. I don't need to tell you, you know, the absolute
who's in
truth
the alliance,
here.
Right.
You know, yeah. You want to hear it, but I'm trying to earn $1 million here. So I'm giving you what I can give you. That's a true story.
Yeah. Steve Keynes wants to float a theory past
you. Steve Kane?
It's Keynes.
Oh, I know a good friend of mine's named Steve Kane. I was hoping it was him. Steve Keynes, maybe we'll become friends, but so far I don't know, my jury's out. All right, let's hear your question.
He wants to know if you think that Adam is like a baby version of Yule, Jay is a baby version of Ozzy, and Hannah is a baby version of Becky. Is this an accurate rendition of the final three?
No, it's not. Adam and Yul, I mean, yes, they're both strategic, smart players, but Yul is an unbelievably savvy, polished guy. I mean, talk about the ultimate handler of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made everybody out there feel great. He made everybody out there feel like he was debilitated. He was weak. He wasn't that smart. He wasn't that capable. He was a genius dissembler and a genius strategist. Who's a baby? Who? Hannah's a baby Becky Lee? No. Becky Lee was a great girl, smart, but Hannah's much more effusive, bubbly, much more present, and honestly, much more outwardly strategic. And who was the other baby that he was talking about? David? No. Jay is a baby Ozzy?
Yes.
No. I mean, look, Ozzy is superhuman as far as I can tell. I've been with him. He stayed underwater for 2 minutes or something at a time. I mean, he's, you know, ridiculous athlete. Jay seems a fine athlete too. But Jay has, and all respect to Ozzy, my friend, Jay has a social game very different from the one that Ozzy was able to play. Jay really has a sense of himself. He has a sense of humor about the whole thing. Even though he's fighting for his life, he has a kind of a joie de vivre, as I say, that I really appreciate. I've come to appreciate him more as a player, as I guess that's what happens as the show goes on, you know, except for Sunday, who I never got a sense of except for her name, mm-hmm. Sunday. You come to appreciate the players as more complex, interesting people than you get a sense of at the very, very beginning.
Yeah. Sunday, best name for a day of the week? If you're going to have a...
I like Wednesday myself.
Wednesday.
Yeah, because of the Addams Family.
Addams Family. I feel like Friday is probably like
Friday's fun. Like you're naming your kid just for a party.
Yeah.
Here's my kid Friday. You know what kind of kid that's going to grow up to be.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday, I guess you know what kid that's going to grow up to be, right? What is she? She's like a religious teacher or something, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's just something to do with that.
If you name a kid Sunday, you're going to create a Sunday school teacher, right?
I think so. You don't think it's just like a nickname, right?
A nickname?
Yeah.
What's her full name?
Well,
Thursday, and they just decided. That's a funny nickname. Sunday,
Monday would get beat up.
Monday,
yeah,
and Wednesday, there's a hump day joke somewhere. No, I don't know. I mean, I got no sense of Sunday. She seemed like a softer spoken version of Lisa Welchel mm-hmm. to me, right?
Yeah,
and that's sort of the casting. You know, it's the mom, lovable middle America kind of. Relatively conservative or maybe very conservative person who, you know, is actually a very strong-willed person who did fantastically out there. She was not going to win the game, and she went far. You know, hats off to her.
What about Brett? Do you have any take on Brett?
Brett's an interesting guy, you know, and I hate to get, again, political, but what's the most interesting to me about Brett, maybe it's not political, but I think it is that he is a gay guy who... This is my own homophobia or something. I don't think I'm a homophobic person, but never came across as a gay guy, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just seems like a guy, a Boston cop who wants to get drunk. I mean, that's the character that they put across, right?
Yeah.
With these kind of moobs and you know, he's kind of a heavy set, chunky, fun loving kind of guy.
Right.
And like, oh yeah, I'm gay. And it was a real shoe drop moment, I think, for me and a lot of folks. It's like, what? You know, I think I have pretty good gaydar.
And
I didn't pick up on that at all. And so, again, Brett, I hate to make this about that, but that's my take on Brett.
You know what? Just
eye-opening for the audience.
Yeah, and I feel like I had read that somewhere along the way before we got to that point in the season, so I had known. But I think I got a text from my mom the next morning. She was like, what? That was the shocker of the night.
Yeah. It was. Isn't that strange that even in 2016 that's the shocker of the night?
Mm-hmm.
But cool. Cool on him, cool on them, because it was like just an offhanded thing.
Yeah.
And this guy's a gay guy who is a Boston cop who likes to drink.
Yeah.
You know, and that's who he is. What's the big deal? And it isn't a big deal. And unfortunately or fortunately, that's all I got to say about Brett.
Right.
He does nothing for me, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a player.
Hard to envision the scenario where he gets to the end
and Adam
wins.
Bomb goes off and five people are gone. He's the last man standing. He gets to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, that the moments that we've gotten from him, like the character moments have been there. But in terms of his game, You know, he's always just been sort of like a wingman on, you know, at best.
Yeah. Well, but this is, you know, this goes back maybe to the to your resume building big move kind of thing. You know, we can sit here and say he hasn't done any of that, and so he's not going to win. It's only if everybody else falls apart, but there aren't enough people to fall. As I say, you know, five of them would have to get eaten by a shark, and then he wins the game. Otherwise, thanks for playing.
Ryan Patterson wants to ask you, people are saying that this season is played like a returnee season. Can you speak on that, considering you played in a newbie season and played on a favorites tribe and were also a solo returning player in Philippines? Jeff said, I think it was last week's Tribal Council, where he said, you guys are first-time players, and you guys are playing this like you've played the game before.
Well, this, again, you know, obviously I'm not the first person to think of this or say this, but, you know, it's because the show's been on for 17 years. These guys have, you know, people grow up. Will saw every episode of this game growing up. You know, this is just a part of their lives, their vernacular. They know the game. They know the gameplay. And so they're playing like super fans, you know. And some of them have the physical chops to actually do it and the smarts to actually come up with some interesting strategy.
Right. No,
the first time I played, and you tell me, you know, I played, there were literally folks out there that had never seen the game. They had heard of it. You know, Flicka was like, what? You know, there were other folks out there for whatever reason, recruited, found, you know, they were out there. They had no idea even what Survivor was. Can't we all just get along? You know, I mean, I literally had these conversations with her. We're playing a game here. There's shit happening all around you right now. This conversation is a strategic conversation. Do we have to? You know, can't we just kind of hang out and have some fun? Which is fair enough. But there ain't anybody out there who doesn't know what they're doing when they get on that beach now.
Yeah. I mean, it won't be long until somebody plays this game that wasn't alive when it started.
Oh, that's Will almost.
Almost. I mean, yeah. Just like doing the quick math in my head, I think that Will is probably about, you know, around the same age as my son at the time that, like, I played Survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which is mind-blowing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and so, you know, you grow up in a household of, like my son, you know, when I first played, he was 7, 10, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
I don't even know. My math isn't that good. He'll be 21. He'll be 21 this week. Happy birthday, sweetheart. Have a drink on me. He'll be 21 this week, and I played 10 years ago, 11 years ago. So, yeah, so say he was 10 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was highly influential, impactful on him.
Right. This year was, what, the 10-year anniversary?
Of my playing. It must have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was
happy
I was
anniversary.
44. Oh, thanks, man.
Did we get you anything?
Can we give me a, yeah, give me a knee pad.
Yeah, what's going on with your knee?
My knee's okay. I'm just old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, there's a big 10 years. 10 years is a long time. And if you play Survivor 3 times and you get injured once, you know, it's hard on your body. You know, it's hard on your metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. That's all.
Yeah. Are you still running?
I do run. I was running yesterday.
Yeah. Are you still run barefoot?
I don't run barefoot anymore. I do walk barefoot.
Yeah.
I hike around barefoot. Not always, not exclusively. If I'm really going running or I'm going on a hard hike or working out, I'll wear shoes, but
and you haven't had any problems with that?
No, I walk around my neighborhood all the time barefoot.
Barefoot, you don't even step on a bottle cap ever?
No, because I look where I'm going. I assume you do too. Maybe if you wear shoes, you don't have to look where you're
yeah.
going. But
I take it for granted.
It just means that you should just occasionally look down so that you're not stepping on something sharp or poisonous.
Is there anything you could take away from that, like in terms of a metaphor, in terms of walking around with no shoes on? Is there anything? Is there wisdom there?
I recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, why?
Because it grounds you. I mean, I'm going to sound hippy dippy now, but this is the truth. It grounds you. It feels fantastic. Gets you in touch with the earth. I drive barefoot whenever I can.
You drive barefoot?
Absolutely.
I feel like that's is that against the law?
I don't think it is.
Yeah,
I don't think it is. Yeah. If they knock on my door, I'm going to find out it is. No, you drive. I mean, do you drive wearing gloves?
No.
Okay.
No, I have, so, though.
I mean, you could. I mean, if you're wearing, like, you know, driving gloves, maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, driving in shoes is like driving in winter mittens or something.
You just, you know, feel more
absolutely.
One with the vehicle?
You drive, you literally are driving with, like, your toe.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, if you could.
It's not a metaphor. It's just a fact.
Combine the two for, like, some sort of, like, Fred Flintstone type thing.
if I took the floor out of my car.
Yeah.
And I could yabba dabba do it. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it's a metaphor, but I mean, Survivor certainly did that. I never did that before I played. I loved walking around barefoot, and now I do it 90%
of the time. Is that because of Survivor?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You just, when we were in the Amazon, they told us don't ever walk around barefoot.
Yeah. I think the Amazon's a little different because there are things that can get into your foot and like lay their eggs up in there.
Yeah. They said, do whatever you do.
Yeah. Don't go barefoot.
Don't go in the water and don't walk around barefoot.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to play in the South Pacific where they never had to say that. And in fact, the first time I played, they said, wear your shoes whenever you can. You'd wear your shoes and then sand would get them and rip the hell out of your feet. You know, a grain of sand would get it up inside your shoe somehow and just tear up your feet. Whereas if you walk barefoot, that never happened. So I, most challenges I would do barefoot if I could, unless, you know, it was impossible. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking nonsense, but that's the truth.
Walter Barr wants to ask, before the season, when I first saw David Wright, I thought he might be another Penner. Does he compare himself at all to David? Do you see any of yourself in David?
I mean, he's a writer. I don't. He writes TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I met him once. A nice guy, smart guy, he's a funny guy, pretty self-effacing guy, actually. Which I appreciate. But do I see myself in him? No.
Okay. You want to tell us about any stories about working on the movie? Ron Chan wanted to know.
Sure, Ron. Thanks for asking. It was fantastic. We shot in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes.
Edited the film. STX is a big company that's putting it out in 2,500 theaters nationwide, worldwide, actually. So I couldn't be more excited. It's kind of amazing at 54 years of age to have my biggest movie coming out. It's incredible.
Are you acting in the movie? Or
yes.
You, yes.
Yes, I have a scene in the movie. I'm kind of incognito, as you'll see when you see the movie. I mean, you'll recognize me, but I look a little different.
Yes.
And that was really fun. My daughter has a part in the movie. She's fantastic. We kill her with a shotgun. my son plays beer pong in the movie, which he does effectively.
You're not like the monster in the movie, right?
I'm not going to tell you.
No spoilers.
I'm not the bye-bye
man. Okay.
Although we were joking in Spanish, it's coming out. It's like, don't say his name. There's a whole ad campaign of don't think it, don't say it, don't think it, don't say it. Because once you know the name of the bye-bye man, he comes for you.
Right? Okay.
So in Spanish, the name is don't say his name or don't think his name.
And we were saying it's like, adios amigo.
Yes, the adios, adios hombre. But it's not because that's a silly name. They said, are we really going to name it the adios, adios hombre? And we said no. I'm really excited for people to see it. People really enjoy the movie. I had a great time writing it. I was happy enough to be on the set with my wife, who's directing and did a brilliant job, to be with her and to help her out in any way that I could. We have a great cast. And I'm just excited for folks to finally get to see it.
What does that mean, bye-bye man?
That's his name.
Yeah.
He's the, I don't know. It's like, what's the boogeyman? It's not like, it's, you know, who, what's the boogeyman? It's just another name for a character like that. He's a cool character who makes you see things that aren't there and makes you not see things that are there and kind of gets in your head and finds your flaw and plays on you psychologically. So it's an interesting, I hope it's an interesting movie.
And it's going to be out in January?
Friday the 13th of January it opens.
That's extra spooky.
It's an extra spooky weekend. If you're looking for something super spooky, yeah, they pick the weekend and it's a good one, we hope. And I don't know. I'm just, it's cool. It's been a great thing to work on.
Yeah, well, thank you again for having me out here. Is there anything else from this season that you want to get off your chest?
Off my chest? There's nothing on my chest. I've been enjoying it thoroughly. I think it's a really, really fun season, really good. I'm looking forward to next season, which is an all-returning player season, which I always love. No, man, it's great to see you. Great talking to you.
Yeah, well, it's always fun. What can people do? Follow you on Twitter?
Follow me on Twitter. I'm Jonathan Penner, Survivor Penner.
At Survivor Penner.
Go at Survivor Penner. Yeah, man.
Wait, you've been tweeting about anything good recently?
I read a fantastic book.
Yes.
Movie lovers or family members of movie lovers. It's called The Godfather Notebook. This is a very cool book that Francis Ford Coppola just put out of his notebook that he did when he was making The Godfather. And it's the pages of the novel, The Godfather, and all of his notes and how he approached turning it into it. It's one of the best movie books I ever read. And you get to read most of the novel, The Godfather, which is fantastic. So if you're looking for a good present for your movie lover in your family for this holiday, Godfather Notebook, I really recommend that. or advance tickets to the Bye Bye Man.
That's right. I was just looking at your Twitter, and I see that you are now a verified person on Twitter, Penner.
Okay, what does it mean? Yes, how did I do it? What does it mean?
I don't even know. You have a blue check mark next to your name.
Okay.
That means this is the real Penner.
That's me. I can't imagine there's anyone trying to be the real Penner who's not the real Penner. Woe to you, but good luck, pal.
Yeah, it says here, it's really me. How do I know him? I'm him, of course. And to doubters, I say once more, that's bollocks.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. This is the one thing from Twitter I wanted to mention, that you tweeted that somebody had messaged you, happy 20,000 days of being alive.
Yeah, that was weird. I got this just the other day. Like somebody, I mean, first off, what the hell do people have to do with their time? Second off, it was made me feel very uncomfortable, A, that somebody was cared enough to send that to me, and that's one weird thing, but also that I'm 20,000 days old.
Yes.
That's a weird calibration of time, right? Because I guess I don't have another 20,000 in me. That'd make me 108 when I died. That's a lot of, so I'm now got less than 20,000 days ahead of me.
Wow.
What do we do with it?
Between all this technology... your knees are going to be fine. You're going to be walking around barefoot. For
yes, they're going to
30,000 more.
They're going to download my extraordinary intelligence, and I'll live in a cybernetic way somewhere.
Yeah, you watched The Westworld?
I haven't watched it. Is it good?
That's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah, I haven't watched much TV. It's Oscar time, and I'm lucky enough that I get the screener, so I've been watching a lot of movies.
People that the times that you've been on in the fall, you give people some hot picks, besides Bye Bye Man.
Okay, the best movies that I've seen, I haven't seen them all, but La La Land is really fun, loved it, and Moonlight, I haven't seen, but I hear it's great, but Manchester by the Sea is very, very touching, sort of extraordinary acting exercise. Some folks found like, well, what was that about? Other folks agree with me that it's a great, great movie. Fences was good. Going to see Silence, the Scorsese picture this weekend. But if you got to see two, see La La Land and Manchester by the Sea.
Okay. All right. Jonathan Penner, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rob.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That's my interview with Jonathan Penner from earlier this afternoon. Had a nice pizza date with Penner and Stacy, and fun times were had by all. Hopefully, we can only hope so. All right, so that's going to do it for us here today on this episode of the podcast. Coming up in about just a couple hours for me and not too much longer for you guys, my voicemails with Jordan Parhar, so I'll be getting into that, answering all of your feedback from the latest episode of Survivor, and then, of course, the finale is right around the corner coming up on Wednesday, so looking forward to all that. If you're doing any holiday shopping this weekend, of course, I want to remind you one last time about the 12 days of deals going on Amazon.com. Get those great deals all weekend long and all month long, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Looking forward to hearing what you guys think in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.